Welcome to CS50 Walkthrough 7. Today we're going to cover Problem Set 7, CS50 Finance. The topics of this problem set are a bit different from the previous problem sets. Instead of programming in C for the server, we're going to program for the web. We're going to use PHP, which is a language that's very similar to C, but it offers some very nice features when programming for the web, and also MySQL, which is a database backend that we'll be using to store our data that we're manipulating in PHP. And we're going to implement a stock buying, selling, portfolio viewing, history viewing website called CS50 Finance, or in the name of your choice. And it's going to have a bunch of features that will allow users to buy stocks, sell stocks, and basically manage their portfolio on the website. Okay, so let's see. All right, so so the PDF for this week's problem set is very long. It's 14 pages, 15 pages, I don't know. And 5 pages of it, I think, are dedicated to permissions, which are basically, so Unix and Windows, to some extent, has this the concept of permissions. And it means that some files are accessible by some people and some files are not accessible by some people. And when we're developing web applications, we need to make sure that the files that we develop are accessible to the right people and the right servers. So the PDF goes through what kind of permissions that you should assign each of your files. And for example, the static content, for example, HTML, PNG images, JPEG images, CSS files, JavaScript, etc., are readable by others and should be read-write by owner, obviously, so you can edit them. So what does this mean? If we go into the next slide, we see that readable by, there's this whole system of bits that control how the permissions are set on a file. And you don't need to worry about this because all the instructions are in the PDF. But if you're curious, there's this slide that shows you how read is 100 in binary, write is 010 in binary, execute is 001 in binary. And all that boils down it basically results in this 3 times 3 is 9. So 9 sets of characters that represent what you can do and what you cannot do with a file. So for example, if a file that is readable, writable, and executable by everyone is 7, is 777, and so on. So if you didn't get this, that's okay because all the instructions are in the PDF. So we go back to the previous page, and directories are executable by others. PHP scripts read-write by owner. So these options might differ if you're using some other server, some non-CS50 cloud server. I'm not sure if DreamHost has the same setup as us. It might. So if you're thinking of transferring your files to DreamHost so you can keep your site running for a year or more, then you may need to think about permissions. But for now, for this problem set, just take a look at the long descriptions about permissions on the PDF, and you should be fine. So if you see any, for example, access forbidden errors, then that might be a result of permissions. So that's just a quick note. Okay. So the distribution code. So we have a bunch of files again that we've copied over from the distribution code in CS50's home directory. And some of them are PHP files, some of them are images, and some of them are CSS files. So let's see. So first, a PHP file is, as the name might suggest, a file that contains PHP code. So it's much like a C file, except PHP is an interpreted language, so you don't need to compile things into object code, .o or binary, as we saw with GCC. We simply need to have a PHP file and the interpreter, which is a program that lives on the server and interprets PHP into code that the machine can understand, will execute the program for you. So we have index.php. What is index.php? What significance does it have in a web directory? If you've been on the internet for any number of weeks, then you should see the significance of index.something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, index.php is the main page. So for example, if you go to some server, some static server, then you might see, if you say, I don't know, www.google.com, you might see www.google.com/index.html, which basically maps the same directory that you're referring to when you go to www.google.com. And index.php is the same. It basically means this is the index of the website. This is the front page. So when you go to the directory that contains your problem set from a web browser, then you'll be directed to index.php whether you ask for that or not. So that's index.php. And so at the moment, index.php simply says under construction. It's not very interesting. There's just an image and some text. But we'll be changing index.php to show a portfolio of the stocks that you currently own. And I'll show you an example of this implemented on the CS50 course website. Let's see. Okay, so this is the big board. Am I clicking the right place? Yeah, so this is CS50 Finance. And this is basically the staff solution. And it's linked from the front page of the course website. And this is the login page that you're seeing here. And once you log in, you'll see this is index.php of the staff solution. And I don't know if you can see the, we have to make the text bigger. So this is basically the portfolio showing that Jane Harvard currently has $10,000 worth of cash and no stocks. So this is what your final index.php might look like, although I hope it'll look better than this, because this is just David's attempt at creating the a solution. Okay, and so this is index.php. We'll take a look at what it actually looks like. Let's see. Which one is index.php? Third one now. Thanks. Wait, what? Oh, thanks. Okay, so this is index.php. Whoop. All right, so this is the distribution code for index.php. And okay, at last. So at the beginning, we have we're opening a PHP code block, which, if you remember from lecture, opens up some PHP. So you can intersperse HTML with PHP. So if you need to code something in PHP, then you have to start this open angle brackets question mark PHP, and then end that PHP block with question mark end the brackets. So what do we have here? We have a comment saying require common code that looks just like C, and it says require once includes common.php. What do you think this means?
Library.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be some kind of library. And although we don't call it a library, it basically does the same thing as a library. So it's the same thing as an include statement in C. What this basically does is it goes to the file name that's specified, includes common.php, and then it copies that the code from that page and then pastes it into that place where we have require once. So it's basically like include, sharp include. And but it's a bit different. It's not include. It says require once. There actually is an include function in PHP, which does exactly the same thing as in C. But the thing about PHP is that it's pretty forgiving of errors. So in C, if you, for example, refer to an include file that didn't exist, then GCC would complain at you, right? It would stop execution, it would just stop compiling. But PHP is really forgiving. So if you said include includes common.php and includes common.php didn't exist, then it'll probably just do it for you. It won't find the file, but it'll just continue and it'll just skip the line and maybe paste an error into your web browser, but that's about it. So the thing you have to remember about PHP is that you really do have to do your own error checking. It won't stop compiling for you. So instead of include, we've used require. Require means that the whole script fails if the file doesn't exist or there's some other kind of error that causes includes common.php not to be included. And require once basically means that if you specify multiple require onces with the same file name, then it'll complain at you and stop. So that's required once, just like include. And if you see the rest of index.php, we'll see that this file doesn't actually contain any more PHP. It's just XHTML. So there we have the required code, and then we have a reference to a CSS file at the top here, and then some standard XHTML tags that say paste an image and under construction on the page. So that's index.php. So I think the natural progression would be to look at common.php now that we've seen that it's included. Let's see. Okay. So this is common.php. Okay, so common.php looks just like a C source code file. We have these this code for displaying errors to your web browser instead of just putting them in your log file. And then we have these other requirements. So index.php required common.php, which in turn requires constants.php, helpers.php, and stock.php, which we'll take a look at later. And there we have here we have something to do with sessions. Does anyone remember what sessions were? No? Okay, so we'll take a look at that later on. And then here we have some more funky-looking code with this funky-looking regular expression, which seems to redirect people to some other page if something is not something. And then we have these strange lines that seem to complain at the user for leaving things blank. And then we have some code that seems to connect to a database server, judging from the comments. So that's common.php. There's really you can modify common.php if you want, but for the moment it works. And for implementing many of the features in CS50 Finance, you won't need to meddle with this just yet. But that's common.php, and we'll take a look at some of the other files. Stock.php. Okay, so stock.php is a completely PHP file. There's no XHTML in it. Well, common.php didn't have any XHTML either. But it seems to, the stock.php file seems to declare a class called stock. So this is a syntax we didn't see in C. It's a very PHP or Visual C Sharp. These sort of new programming languages like to use these. We see that stock defines some public members. Can anyone tell me what public means here? They're global variables? So not really. So we're defining something called a class, and there's public, and I can tell you that there's also private, protected, and some other modifiers that you can add to these variables. Global was a good try, but not really. It effectively does the same thing as global variable, meaning that you can refer to stock, the contents of stock, for example, symbol, name, price, time, change. These are defined as public, so you can access them from outside of this class. So basically what a class is it's an abstraction barrier around some data, meaning that you can't access everything that's inside, but you can only access certain portions of things that are inside that class. And what it helps is that it helps helps you write cleaner code, because you're not referring to things willy-nilly. You're referring to things that have that are defined to be referable, so to speak. So that's what a class is. And if you're really into this kind of thing, then CS51 is the class to take next semester. Well, anyway, it's for this problem set, this class called stock is basically the same thing as struct in C. And what it does is it defines some fields, symbol, name, price, time, change, and I think a couple others at the bottom here. Open, high, low, and items. And what those contain, they're pretty self-explanatory. The comments say that, for example, high is the most recent business day's high, and low is, of course, the day's low. And some very important fields, the most important fields are a symbol, which contains the symbol of the stock, for example, AAPL, MSFT, these kinds of symbols and the stock's name, the full name of the company. And we also have the price, which we'll be using later on when we implement quote. Okay, so that's stock. Does anyone have any questions about stock.php or any of the files that we've looked at? No? Okay, so that's stock. And so we saw that when we went to the big board and we didn't log in, we haven't logged in yet, then we were redirected to this page called login.php. And so you've seen this on any website has a login page nowadays. So it asks for username and password, and presumably if you type in the correct username and password, something that's already been registered in the account database on CS50 Finance, then you should be able to get in. So let's see what how this is implemented. So open login.php. Okay, so it looks like we're doing the same thing here, requiring the common code. So obviously, common.php is named common.php because we include it. It's common to all the scripts, and it defines some useful functions for us. So that's common.php included here. And then we seem to be doing something with sessions. So $_session seems to be some kind of array that we're initializing to nothing. And then we're doing some cookie stuff here. So it seems to be some kind of session/cookie related functions. So has everyone heard of a cookie and what it does, how bad it is, and what good it doesn't do? No? Well, cookies are pretty much hated around the internet because they track your movements, they put advertising on your web pages, and they do all sorts of fancy tracking crap. Stuff, but cookies are actually very useful. The one thing about web applications is that they're not so every request to the web server is separate from each other request. So if I say if I go to Amazon.com and I want to buy a new camera, so I go to the camera page and then I hit add to cart. That request that goes to the server when I say add to cart, and the request when I check out of my shopping cart, when I say checkout, when I click that button, those two are different requests. And there's nothing in the web infrastructure that allows these two requests to be connected together. Do you see what I mean? So if in a world without cookies, or there are other ways of doing it, but in a world without cookies, we wouldn't be able to track users when they went on a shopping cart. So users would be able to add products to their cart, but they wouldn't be able to check out. Do you see what I mean? Because that data wouldn't be able to, there'd be nowhere to store that data, the shopping cart itself. So what sessions do is, what cookies do is enable the web server to uniquely identify each user with a very long tracking code. So if you go to one page and then you go back to another page, then the web server knows that you are the same person who visited that previous page. So that's cookies, and we'll actually go into sessions. I'll explain what sessions are after I've looked through this. We've looked through this code. So here's some session stuff, and then we have this this form action login2.php method equals post. Can anyone tell me what this means? Where is the data going when I click submit on that button, when I click login? That line right there? Yeah, the data seems to go to login2.php. And what is the method? Yeah, it's post. So the method is post. Can anyone tell me what the difference between a get request and a post request is? If you remember, there were two types of HTTP requests, get and post. So if I go to google.com, David was showing this in lecture, if I go to google.com and type in computer science 50, and I see www.google.com/search?q=computer+science+50, if I see that in the URL, was that a get request or a post request? Any guesses? It's not post, unfortunately. It's the other one. It's get. So get is when you send data over a URL, when you encode the data into the URL and then send it over to the web server. So do you see how that works? So instead of asking for simply index.php, I might ask for index.php ?name equals Chris, for example. And that would be a GET request. A POST request, on the other hand, sends the same kind of data over not the URL, but over the headers of the request. So a header is, for example, if you ask for index.php, then your web browser doesn't just send I'm looking for index.php. It says I'm a web browser called Firefox. I'm version something something, and I accept languages English and French and Spanish, and I have these POST requests, and I'm looking for index.php. So what a web browser does is ask for all these add all these data points to the request when you're requesting a page from the web server. So the POST data travels as part of that. So basically the thing you should take away from this is that GET you will see in the URL, POST you will not. But they're sending the same kind of data. So GET and POST are good for different things. But in this case, the login, would we want a GET request or a POST request? So think about the implications of sending the login data over a GET request. What would happen? Anyone? Mm-hmm. Yeah, people could see your login. So you'd hit login on that page, and say my username was Cato and my password was test. I'd go to login2.php ?username equals Cato and password equals test. And that's just like, it's not very good security. I mean, POST isn't very good security either, but if you're showing the URL on the address bar, then you could do better than that. So POST is what we use here, sort of to hide the username and password, and sort of to not pollute the URL as well. Okay, so this is login.php. It's not very interesting because all it does is it's an HTML page with some fancy session functions here. But we'll look at login2.php where we saw that the data was going. So here we're doing the same thing. We're requiring common code, common.php. We're used to that now. And then we're escaping username and password for safety. So what does this mean? Did David go over this in lecture? No? Okay. Right, so this is a detail. So did he talk about SQL injection and how that is a dangerous something that you might encounter on the web? Okay, so I think he did. But anyway, SQL injection is when, for example, you were logging into CS50 Finance. And instead of typing your username and password like a nice user would do, you would type a single quote and then a semicolon. And then you would type other SQL code in there. For example, delete all from users. So that's it's a kind of attack that has been done, and it can still be done on many web scripts which aren't properly programmed. For example, here is a SQL query. Select UID from users where username equals something. We presume that because we're using printf, $username will go into username equals %s. Just like the C version of SprintF, and password equals $password. Okay, does everyone see that? Yeah. So what does this SQL SQL query do? Can you tell me, first of all, is it adding data, is it editing data, is it deleting data, or is it getting data? The verb is always at the beginning of the SQL query. So the verb appears to be select, which is what kind of request is that to the database server? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a GET kind of request. So it's getting data from the database server. So select UID. UID is actually a column here in the database. The table that we're getting data from is users. And the condition that we're using is where username is the username that the user supplied, and the password is the password that the user supplied. So is everybody familiar with how a database looks? The database tables and the database columns and rows? Yeah? Is anyone not sure? Okay. So a database consists, well, a database server stores one or more databases which store one or more tables. Okay. And one, so you can think of one table as an Excel worksheet and a database as an Excel workbook. Do you know the difference? So if you go to Excel, if you open Microsoft Excel, you'll see that it has a bunch of tabs at the bottom, sheet one, sheet two, sheet three. Each of those sheets is in row and column format, right? It's like a grid. And those are worksheets. And in an SQL database, those are tables. And the entire Excel file, the .xls file, is the workbook. It contains multiple worksheets or multiple tables in the database server. Get it? Yeah? Okay, so presumably we have a table called users in the database that we're working with. And here we don't see what database we're opening because that code is in common.php. But we've opened some kind of database, presumably a database that you've specified and that belongs to you, in common.php. And then once we've opened that file, that database, we're going into the users table and then loading the appropriate row from the table that contains the correct username and password combination that the user supplied. So let's see what the database actually looks like. if you follow the instructions on the in the specification PDF, you'll see that there's actually a very nifty tool called phpMyAdmin. Which in itself is programmed in PHP, written in PHP. And the username and password that you use to connect to the database is available via a link that's available in the PDF itself. So here we have phpMyAdmin. Can everyone see the text, or is it too small or blurry? Is that better? Okay, so here we have the database. We see here that this database server, or at least the view that we have of the database server, has three databases, jharvard underscore FP for final project, jharvard pset 7 for problem set 7, this one, and jharvard pset 8 for the next problem set. So there's a bunch of tabs on the right side of phpMyAdmin, databases, SQL, status variables, et cetera, et cetera. But what we're interested in is the left column, which says, please select a database. So we'll select one. In this case, as you'll see in the PDF, the database that we're using is jharvard pset 7. And here we've opened the database. And what this page shows you is that you have one table in the database called users. And that's it. That's basically what this page tells you. So we'll look inside users by clicking on users here in the left column. And then here it says showing rows 0 to 8, 9 total. And you can see that there are a bunch of rows. So each of these is a row. UID 1, username dhelmet, password 12345. That's a row in this table called users in the jharvard underscore pset 7 database. Do you see the relationship between those three layers? Yeah? So it's like opening up an Excel worksheet and then looking at the individual rows. So row 1 or row 0 contains dhelmet's username and password and user ID. The next row contains the pointy head boss's username and password and user ID. Do you see what kind of data structure we're looking at? Yeah? Okay. So, well, those are the rows in our users table that have been pre-populated. And so let's take a look at the code again that logs a user in. Select UID from users where username equals the username and password equals password. So for example, let's say I typed in dhelmet for the username and 12345 for the password. What would the SQL query look like after I call sprintf? What would sprintf return? Mm-hmm. So sprintf will not return 1 because it's simply returning. Remember, sprintf is exactly the same as the version in C, where it just fills in those gaps, like percent %s will be replaced with dollar username, and password equals dollar $s will be replaced with dollar password. Okay, So do you see it'll just return select UID from users where username equals dhelmet and password equals 12345? Yeah. So that's our SQL query right there. And do you see what it might do if we call this on this table that we have here? That's our table there, and that's our SQL query. What would it return? So do you see what I'm asking? Do you understand? I'm going to call this SQL query on the database server, and what is it going to return? Mm-hmm. Anyone? Well, it's going to return 1, as you said earlier, because the user ID is 1. So for the row that where username equals dhelmet and password equals 12345, there's only one such row, right? Because there are no other dhelmets and no other people with password 12345. So it's going to return one row with the user ID 1. So one thing about SQL is that you don't get just the value 1. It always likes to return results in rows. So you'll just get so what your result set, which is the terminology for a return result from a database server, is going to be like this. So this is the column. The column header says UID and 1. So it's just going to return a one-row table containing one element per row, saying 1. So that's what this SQL query will return. OK? All right, so that's the login query. So we built the SQL query here using Sprintf, and then we actually execute the query here, MySQL query. And unfortunately, MySQL query itself doesn't return the rows that the result set. It will return a handler, basically like a pointer to the results, called $result. And then we can call this function called MySQL numRows on $result, the pointer to the results. And MySQL numRows, as the name might suggest, returns the number of rows in that result set. So if we were able to find the username and password, the correct combination, it would be 1, right? Because we'd return 1 row saying 1. But if we weren't able to find it, for example, if we typed in dhelmet but the wrong password, then it would return an empty result set. So there'll be nothing, basically that wouldn't exist. It would just be an empty result set. So MySQL numRows would return 0. Okay, so do you see how it's checking the username and password this way? It might be unintuitive at the beginning because it seems to retrieve data from the database when really it should be checking with equals equals, right? But do you see how it's doing this? By looking for the right combination and seeing whether it exists or whether it doesn't exist when MySQL numRows is 0. Okay? You guys are all pretty quiet today. So that's MySQL numRows. And then when we've called MySQL numRows, and then we've checked that we have one result indeed, then we can call MySQL fetch array, which is a different function in PHP's kitchen sink of MySQL-related functions, on the same pointer, $result, and that will return the next row in the result set. So in our example, if we typed in the correct password and we found out that the user ID was 1, then $row would return this row. Yeah, good. So that will be $row. $row will be an array of the rows. Sorry, the columns in the row. So it will be an array containing one element, saying 1. Okay. So that's MySQL fetch array. And then we're doing some more session stuff. $_session UID equals row UID. So MySQL fetch array actually returns an associative array. It's not just any old array, but it's an associative array. And can anyone tell me what an associative array is? No? So what did the arrays that we used in C look like? What kind of keys did they have? What was on the left side of an array? The first value, could you elaborate?
You mean array
0? Yeah, array 0 would contain the first value. Yeah, so array 0, as we can see, is the 0th element. So the arrays in C were indexed by number. So array 0, array 1, array 2. The keys, which is the stuff that's inside the square brackets, would always be a numeric integer, right? But in the case of PHP, you can do that, but you can also do these associative arrays, which are basically a fancy way of saying that the key is a string or something else that's not a number. Okay, so we see here we have an array called $_session, and it has a key called UID. So in C, we might call that key 0 or 1, but in PHP, we can elaborate on that and name things after strings, name keys after strings. Yeah? Okay, so we see here that we have an array $_session, and we're somehow setting the row with the key UID to $row UID. So what was $row again? What did it contain? Pardon?
One,
yeah. So it contains one, but it's not a, this isn't C, so MySQL fetch array doesn't return an array indexed by the column. So for example, in that particular SQL query, MySQL fetch array would return an array that looks like that would be our array that shows what $row looks like. Basically, there's one key, UID, because of this column, and the number would be 1, the value of that key. Okay? So basically, this is just a horizontal, a vertical representation of this this result set, or rather the next row in the result set. Because if you call MySQL fetch array multiple times, then it'll continue returning the next result in the result set. Okay. All right. So, and then we see that if we are able to log in, then we redirect to index.php. Redirect is a function defined in helpers.php, which redirects users to different pages on the website. Or if we weren't able to log in, then we apologize, saying invalid username and/or password. Okay. Okay, so we'll take a look at what PHP sessions are. Let's see. Okay. Right, so I talked about sessions. So I mentioned that there was a disconnect between multiple requests in an HTTP environment because there's nothing that that inherently stores the unique identifier of a user. But with sessions, for example, if I'm on page 1, let's say this is some page on our CS50 Finance webpage, and I say session_start, this is very important because it means that sessions have been initialized. And you'll see that at the top of, I think, common.php. So basically, it'll appear at the top of every invocation of any page on the CS50 Finance website. And then we can set things like $_session_name to Cato. Do you see what this is doing? So what was $_session? What does it look like now that we've covered associative arrays? Well, it looks like an associative array, right? Because $_session seems to be an array, and the key inside is a string, name. So this is an array in itself. $_session is, well, let's say this is $_session. $_session equals, in this case, we have set the key name to Cato. So basically, we're setting some data in the $_session array, and that's it. We're setting that some data, and it's going to get stored in this session storage space on the web server. Okay, and then the neat thing about this is that if I go to page 2.php, for example, and then I say session_start, and I print $_session_name, that will yield Cato. Do you see what's happening? So we save some data into the $_session array, in page one. And then in a subsequent request, we were able to read it out again by referring to $_session again. This is pretty neat, right? Because we can store data on the server now. Okay. And the neat thing is that you might think that this is going to cause problems, because what if I go to my website and I say I'm Cato, but everybody else who goes to the website after me thinks they're Cato too, right? Because, I mean, if there was only one copy of $_session, then we'd result in everyone being Cato. But the neat thing about this is that if somebody else, say Johnson, goes to page one, the same purple script that I had up there, page one, and then says session start, and then sets her own name, session, $_session name equals Jiansu, and then that will get stored in session storage space. Okay? It gets stored in the same space, but it's not going to override the old value that I had there. When she goes to goes to page two, again, the same page that I went to earlier on, she can print out her own name. And then if she finishes with page two, and then I go to page two too, then I won't get, if I say print $_session name, I won't get Jiansu, I'll get Cato. Do you see how this is working? It's compartmentalizing each of the users into their own kind of pen where they can store their own data. Yeah? This is the neat thing about sessions. Okay? Do you have any questions about sessions? Nope. Okay. We'll take a quick tape break here. And then we'll come back with the features you need to implement, and we'll actually implement one of them. All right, I'm going to talk about the features that you need to implement in CS50 Finance. And so the first one is user registration. What does this sound like? It seems to be a simple case of just adding usernames and passwords, and maybe the amount of cache that a user has to the database, so that they can subsequently log in with login.php. So that's user registration. So if we're writing register.php, which will be the user registration page, what might we have to do first? Well, what might we have to do in the end? If we're going to write rows into the database to save the account data, then what's in a high-level description, what would the page do? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but take users' data, and what would it do with the data that it's taken? Yeah, put it in a table. So register.php would take the user's data, and then presumably it would either post or get that data to register2.php, and then register2.php would simply add that data to the database. Okay, so I mean it's really simple, right? That's all it's doing. It's just getting users' data, then in another page it's just saving that data to the database. And so what else does it need to do in register2.php? Besides just adding the data, it should do what? So think back to your previous problem sets where you used getInt or getString. Could you simply getInt and then use that data? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You really have to make sure it's validated, especially for web applications, because you really don't know who's on the other side of that pipe or that tube. It might be an attacker, it might be your roommate. Someone might be trying to hack in. So you really have to make sure that you have all the input validation that's necessary in your PHP pages, because you have the database, and if you haven't programmed it correctly, then a user might be able to, say, delete all the tables, all the rows in your database, or do other funky stuff with your data, which you probably wouldn't want them to do. So that's input validation, and that's a common theme in web development that you need to implement. So that's user registration, but I want to talk about getting quotes. What is getting quotes? What would the code for getting a quote do? So to visualize, getting a quote would entail two pages, getQuote.php and getQuote2.php, and getQuote.php would get a symbol, would prompt the user for a symbol, like getString maybe. And then when the user's inputted a symbol, they'll click the submit button, and they'll get transferred to getQuote2.php, where you'll retrieve the current price of the stock, and then print that out to the user. how might we go about doing this? So one thing that I can say is that CS50 Finance uses data from Yahoo Finance. So wouldn't it be neat if in getquote.to.php we could somehow ask Yahoo Finance for the current stock price and then print that out to the user? Yeah. Okay. So let's flesh that out. So getting data from a web server sounds like a difficult task, but it's actually really easy with PHP, and it can actually be implemented in one line of code. But to make things even simpler, the distribution code actually implements the function to get a quote from the Yahoo Finance server, which is in helpers.php, right here. So we scroll down, we have lookup. So it relies on Microsoft for articles and Yahoo for everything else. So the description says it returns a stock by symbol, case insensitively, else null if not found. Okay. So it says returns a stock by symbol, and the return type up here, up there in the comment, looks like stock. What was stock? Okay, it's a data type. Yeah, it's a class. Exactly. So stock was the class that we defined in stock.php, and it looks like we're returning a stock as the return value for lookup, our function right here. So it says it takes a symbol, case insensitively, so presumably dollar symbol is a string. So in PHP, unlike C, you don't need to specify the data type of your function return values or the arguments of your functions. Okay. So we know that in C, this might look like stock lookup string symbol, right? Because we have to specify return value in C, stock, and then we have to specify the data type for an argument, so string symbol. But in C, we can simply say function lookup dollar symbol. It's basically the same thing. It's just without the data types. Okay, so that's the function that we have here. It does so it's calling fopen, very similar to the fopen that we had in C, except Yahoo is a constant that we defined in constants.php that is a URL to Yahoo. So we see here the fopen in PHP can actually retrieve files from across the internet, not just the file system, but across the internet. So fopen in PHP is much more powerful, although the syntax is very very similar, it does more things than the fopen in C. So it says it downloads the first line of CSV file. So the files that we're downloading from Yahoo appear to be in this comma separated values file. So it's the values are separated by commas, but we don't need to worry about that detail right yet, because this function is doing all the work for us. It seems to set some, once it's got the data from Yahoo, it's going to remember the stock symbol and trades and all the data, all the other data that we need. For example, it's going to remember the stock symbol, the stock's name, and the current price in the stock class. So dollar stock is an instance of the stock class here. This is also new. You don't see this in C. What it's doing is it's basically mallocing some space for a new instance of stock. So in C, this might be stock malloc size of stock. Okay, but here we're using the new identifier, which says that we're creating a new stock, and this is a syntax shared by many other languages too, except just not C. And then once we've set that data in stock, we do some things here. And then we return stock, okay? So it seems to be doing what the description says, right? If it can find the stock symbol, then it will return the stock as a type of class stock. And if it can't find it, it returns null somewhere up there. So that's lookup. So can you see that getquote2.php is actually very simple? It reads the data from the user, and it simply calls lookup, right? That's all it needs to do to get a stock. It'll be in class stock, but so it'll be encapsulated in this struct-like data structure called stock, but it'll still be able to get the stock data from Yahoo. Yeah? Okay, so for being such a good audience, I'm actually going to do something that I've never done. I'm actually going to implement this code in walkthrough. Are you happy? Okay, so let's see. Quote.php. What does quote.php need to do? Quote2.php is going to actually get the quote. So quote.php, in an analogous form to login.php and login2.php, is simply going to print out a form that says, hey, just type your quote in there and I'll get it to you. So form, what would be a good action? What is the action attribute? So we had method, which what would be a good method here? No? Post? Yeah, get. Actually, either would work. And maybe get here, because we wouldn't mind if the stock symbol was in the URL, right? So method equals get, and action. Action is where you want the data to be getted or posted. So in this case, we want it to go to quote2.php, right? Does everyone see that? Yeah. So that's our form. And then presumably we want the stock symbol, so input type equals input type equals text, name equals symbol, size equals, let's say 30. Well, no, we don't need 30, a 10. And then input type submit, value get quote. Okay, so this is our HTML form. It's very simple, right? If we go to cloud.cs50.net jharvard's directory, we have to log in first. Okay, so we go to quote.php, and then it asks for a quote. Not very pretty, but it works, right? So we type in some symbol. What symbol do you want? I'll just use a random one then. Get quote, and then here we see in the URL that we are now at, if you can see, well, the URL says cloud.cs50.net/jharvard/pset7/quote2.php, ?symbol=msft. So you can see that the data was sent to quote2.php via get. Yeah? Okay, so it seems like our form is working, right? Mm-hmm. Do you have any questions? No? Okay, so now what we have to do is to implement quote2.php to actually get the quote. Okay, so we're trying to get the quote here. So how do we get the quote, the symbol that the user just typed into quote.php? Remember, we were using a get request to submit the data to quote2.php, so how can we get that data? Receive? good try, but no, not really. So it was one of the super global arrays that David mentioned in lecture. $_cookie was one of them. We're getting some data, so $_get, yeah. $_get is the super global that's, so a super global is basically a global that's available everywhere. It's like a C global. And $_get is an associative array that contains all the items that were submitted via get. Okay? So in this case, $_get will be an associative array containing one element. The key will be symbol, and the value will be what we just typed there. Okay? So, if I want to get the, so if, let's say I just want to print out the symbol that the user's just typed in to check that this works, print, $_get, $_get, symbol. Okay. And then what should we get? Looks like it's working, right? $_get symbol, and we've got the actual value that the user typed in. So it looks like we can actually use this value to get the quote. So what was the function that we used to get a quote again that was defined in helpers.php?
Lookup,
yeah. So lookup was the function that we used. So instead of print, we're going to use lookup. And what did lookup return? It returned either a stock class or a null pointer, right? So let's say stock equals lookup. And then we need to check if stock is null, just like in C. If stock if stock is null, then what do you want to do? We want to print out an error message. But the thing in CS50 Finance is that there's a framework of apologies. So when there's an error, we want to apologize to the user. So apologize, stock not found, or maybe it was a different error, so or other error. Because, for example, if the connection to Yahoo failed, then stock would be null too. So we don't know if either the stock symbol was not found or if there was another kind of connection kind of error. So if stock equals null, apologize. And apologize will immediately exit the PHP script. So we don't need to worry about returning to something or exiting from the script. But so we can just apologize. And then now we've probably got the stock in hand. How do we get the price of the stock? How do we get the price? So we see here that in our class of stock, we defined a public member called $price, which contains the price of the stock. So the way you access something which is inside a class is remarkably similar to how you do it in how you do it in C. You just simply say stock arrow price. Okay, so it's very similar to using a struct as a pointer in C. So we'll echo that. Oh, so echo is actually a synonym for print, and you don't need parentheses around it because echo is not a function. It's like a macro. It's built into PHP. So, and actually echo is slightly faster than print. So I tend to use echo. Some people use print. So I'm echoing the stock price and let's see if it works. Yeah, it seems to work. $19.32. Yeah. One thing that you also have to remember is that dollar stock, when you're using the arrow notation, you don't put the dollar sign. So it's not dollar stock arrow dollar price. It's dollar stock price. Okay. So this seems a bit arbitrary, and I don't know why it's implemented like this, but this is how you access a member of a class. So that's dollar stock price. And we want it to be a little bit neater than this. We probably wanted to print out some text saying, this is the stock price for such and such stock. So let's move this down. So that's the end of the PHP code block. And we're going into the HTML. And let's say we want to print out something here in the body tag. We can open our own PHP PHP code block, and then move it here. And let's make it a bit nicer. So for example, the current price of okay, so what have I done here? This is very PHP-specific syntax. I'm doing an echo statement. That hasn't changed. But I'm printing out some HTML. We opened a paragraph tag. And then we're saying the current price of... And then we sort of left the string hanging there. But then we went on to the next line. And notice there's a dot at the beginning of the line. The dot is the concatenation operator in PHP. So if you're used to Java or other languages like that, then you might have used the plus operator, which concatenates two strings. But in PHP, that operator is dot. So that concatenates the string the current price of with dollar stock name, which was the name of the stock, and then we're concatenating a third string is. With a fourth string, dollar stock price, with a fifth string, end of P. Okay? So this is just like printing out a, this is like having a bunch of different print statements, except we've just concatenated them together. Okay? So let's see if this actually works. I hope it does. Yeah, it works. So the current price of Microsoft Corp is $19.32. Obviously, Microsoft Corporation itself costs much more than that. But it works, right? Yeah? So do you have any questions about how we did this or how we might go about improving it or other things? The question was whether we needed the paragraph tag or not. The answer is we don't, but it's a full part to directly type strings into the body tag. So you have to have some kind of tag that encapsulates that text in a body tag. And one of the requirements of the problem set is that your code validate against a validator. So there are things called validators on the internet, and a particularly useful one is validator.w3.org, which is in the problem set, and it tells you whether your the output of your PHP script is valid XHTML or not. So, for example, if we omitted the p tags, then I think the validator would complain. It would tell you that if that's not correct XHTML. You need to have something that surrounds the text. Okay. So many of the web pages on the internet are written in broken HTML. They're using all sorts of hacks that have been around for decades. But most of those will fail when put under an XHTML validator. Okay? So that's just a way of syntax checking your XHTML. Okay, so that's quote.php. I don't think the problem set asks for much more than that for quote.php. You might need to put a link to the main page to be nice to the user. But that's it. I've implemented that. And let's see what other functions we had to implement. Okay. Back to the beginning. Okay. Features you need to implement. User registration, we talked about getting quotes and maintaining a portfolio. So does everyone understand what a portfolio is? Right, it's just showing what a user owns, and how many shares of each stock someone has. So there are two parts to maintaining a portfolio. There's the backend database. So this is a question of how we're going to store the portfolio in the database. So we will probably have to define some of our own tables, because at the moment our database only contains the users table. So we're only inserting users. We are only able to insert users into the database, so we need to come up with our own schema for inserting portfolio data. And then we also have the front end, which will be index.php. As you saw in the staff solution, index.php shows what you currently own, right? So we need to implement that too. So that's the portfolio. And then there's selling and buying stocks, which are obviously very important features of this problem set. And then there's also the history feature that you have to implement, which will show a user what they've done in the past and how much they sold the stock for and how much they bought something for example. Okay. So let's take a look at the back end of our portfolio and let's see what we can do. So we're going to go back to phpMyAdmin because we're meddling with the database. So we go back to the database itself by clicking on this link, jharvard_pset7. And then there's this convenient form here that says, create new table on database, jharvard_pset7. So what do you want the table that contains our portfolio to look like? What are some prerequisites for the table? The user, yeah. Specifically, we want the user ID. Because in relational databases like MySQL, we tend to store things as mappings between an ID and some data. So instead of storing the username, for example, what if the user changes their username? If we use the user ID, we would still be able to handle that. But if we dealt with things with usernames, then we'd have to change all the rows in every table that uses those keys, Okay, so we tend to refer to things using user IDs, but that's good, user IDs. And what else? Their stocks, yeah. So specifically, what stocks they have, and how many stocks they have. So it seems like there are three columns in our new table that stores each of the portfolios of each user. So we're going to create a new table called maybe stocks, and number field 3. Okay, so. The PDF, the problem set specification goes into to greater detail about how you use this, but we're going to have some fields, UID, int. We won't worry about the details for now. So stock. So what I've done is I just created a very simple table that contains three columns. So what looks like rows here are just columns in the table that we've just created. There's the UID, the user ID table column that contains which is a type of integer. It says type int, and there's a stock column which seems to be something called a varchar 255, which means it's a variable. Character. It's a string, basically, of up to 255 characters in length, and shares is another integer. Okay, so these are the columns in our table. So we can try inserting things into this portfolio that we've just created. Insert. So let's say I'm user ID 1, and I buy 5 shares of Microsoft. What would I want to type into each of these three fields? So what's the user ID? UID is 1. Mm-hmm. So there's 1 right there. What's the stock? Microsoft. Mm-hmm. So MSFT. And shares, did I say 5? So 5 shares. OK, so and I hit go. Very simple. It just inserted a row into our table for us. So. You see here that phpMyAdmin actually tells you the actual SQL query that it executed, which is insert into stocks, UID stock shares values 1 MSFT 5. So this is the SQL query that it executed. And one useful way of using phpMyAdmin is that you can use it to actually edit your data, but you can also use it as to figure out the correct SQL to use in your own programs, right? So you can sort of use it as a conduit to that kind of learning. So that's we're inserting a new row here, and we'll check that it actually worked by going to the stocks table right here under jharvard pset 7, and we see here that we have 1 row. Okay? So one paradigm that we're using is that we're not storing each portfolio in its own table. Okay? We're storing everyone's portfolio in one table, right? Do you see how that works? This is very important because many people mess up when they try to create different portfolios for each person, well, different tables for each person. Okay. So, for example, I'll show you one quick example here. When if I'm user ID 2, I'm someone else, and I'm trying to insert a different stock, and then I'm trying to buy some shares, then we go back to the table. We can hit browse. And then you see here that although user ID 1 and user ID 2 are completely different users, and they share no portfolio, their portfolios are independent of each other, but they're still in the same table, right? The only thing that distinguishes their portfolios is their UID, their user ID. Okay? Yep. Mm-hmm.
Does it go into the same table?
So what if a user buys a different stock?
If
UID 1 buys a different stock, then we'd simply insert it into the same table. Yeah, that's a good question. It's not one entry per user.
it's multiple entries per user. And so the in the end, the table will end up containing everybody's stocks, including, like, so for example, if user ID had 5 different types of stocks, then they would also be in the same table. Okay. So one important thing about SQL is that you should not add or delete tables on the fly. You can add and delete rows, but you shouldn't be modifying tables. Okay. So if you find yourself modifying tables in your PHP code, then you've probably done something wrong. There's a design flaw there. Okay? Does that make sense? Any questions there? Okay, great. So that's the portfolio. Okay, so it's portfolio. Okay, so... how to debug. This is going to be very important when you're writing your code. You should use the dump function, which was another function that was defined in helpers.php. And basically, if you specify anything inside the... If you call dump with any variable inside it, then it will print out that variable in human-readable format. Okay. So if you said dump some array, say $sumArray, then it would print out the contents of that array in a human-readable format. Okay, so it's like using print, but print doesn't print out arrays. You need to use dump for that. Okay. There's dump, and there's one thing that you can do with $_get and $_post is that if you're not sure if you're getting the right kind of data, especially if you're using post because you don't see that data that's flying across the internet, then you might want to feed that into dump. So it shows you what it just got and what it just posted. Okay, so that's in the receiving end of the data, in, say, quote2.php or login2.php. You could do that to check. And for testing SQL queries, so we saw that the code files in the distribution, they create a SQL query using sprintf, right? So if you're not sure if your SQL query is working, for example, if MySQL error, which you'll see in the distribution code, returns an error, then you might want to print out the SQL query itself and check to see if it's actually correct. Because, for example, you might mess up the quotes in sprintf so that you're missing some single quotes in the SQL query, or, you know, there might be some other error with the query itself. And you can't see that if you're not doing this. So instead of feeding the SQL query directly into MySQL query, you might want to echo or print out that SQL query before sending it to the server. You'd want to get rid of that, obviously, in the final code that you write, but when you're debugging, that's really useful. And also, you can try feeding that SQL query into phpMyAdmin and see how it complains, if it complains at all. And if it works with phpMyAdmin's SQL tab, where you can type in manual SQL queries, then it works. If it doesn't, then there's something wrong with the query itself. So the tab I'm talking about is right here, SQL. So at the top of any database or table view, you can click on SQL, and then you can type in your own query and then hit go there, and it'll just do it live on the server. So you should be careful with it too, because many a time I've just typed in delete all from some table, and it's just deleted the whole table. But so be careful with what you do there, but it's also a very useful debugging tool when you have a SQL query that you want to check. Okay, so that's that. And also, one final thing about PHP, as David mentioned in lecture today, is that there is a... Do I have to go through this again? Sorry. Okay, so you should read the manual. So PHP, okay, sorry, I'm not very good with computers. there's a very good PHP manual at www.php.net, where you can simply type in the name of any function in PHP, or what appears to be a function name. If it's slightly off, it'll suggest a better function name for you. And then it'll show you the function prototype. It'll show you what it does, its return results, and a long list of comments from users who've used that same function, maybe for the same purpose that you're using it for. So it's very useful. There's also the MySQL server help documentation, which shows you all the queries, but it's very complicated, and I tend to get lost there. So if you want to get a primer on PHP and MySQL, then I recommend wsschools.com. There's some tutorials here. PHP. Yeah, learn PHP here. This is a nice tutorial to using PHP. You can see here all these topics that they're covering, and including this PHP database set of topics. And if you want to learn SQL, SQL, then you can click Learn SQL, and it also has, for example, how to use insert. Let's say you're confused about insert, then you can go to this page, and it'll show you how to insert. Okay. Oh, it's www.w3schools.com. Yeah, I think it's on the course website's resources page, but I'm not sure. If it's not, I'll put it up there. Okay, so those are the resources. I realize that it's a completely new programming language, completely new environment, so it's going to be, it might be a bit tough to get started. But if you have any questions, then do go to the bulletin board, because that's also a very useful source of information. So we're not quite done yet. But if you think you're done with your problem set, then you should check to see if your site works across browsers. So, so for example, if you're on Windows, you could install Firefox, you can install Safari now, Opera, Internet Explorer, any of those web browsers. On the Mac OS X, there's the same kind of selection. So check that your site works across browsers, because that's very important in web development, that your web browser, that your web program works across multiple browsers, because not everyone is using Internet Explorer, not everyone is using Firefox. Okay. And also, is your input validation sufficient? We talked about input validation and how important it was, especially in web programming. So do check for empty values and negative shares, because, I mean, for example, if I were selling negative shares and you didn't check to see if the numbers were negative, then I would be gaining money and I would be able to buy shares using the sell function, which you probably don't want to happen. Also check for fractional shares. If a user typed in 0.23, you'd want to complain at them. You want to apologize at them for that error. Okay, so check for that. And MySQL real escape string, we didn't really get into the details of why SQL injection is dangerous, but if you get any data via get or post, then you need to make sure that it's escaped using MySQL real escape string, which was the huge function, the long name of the function that we saw in login2.php. Do you guys remember? Let's see. Login2.php. Okay, so this was what we had. We were setting a temporary variable called username to MySQL real escape string $post username. And what this does is that it escapes single quotes with a backslash. And it's so that if a user types in a single quote, then it'll be escaped properly. Because, as you can see here, the delimiter for a string in SQL is a single quote. So just like in C, if you had a string with double quotes, and then you also try to type a double quote inside the string, then you had to escape it, right? So it's the same thing here. MySQL real escape string is the automatic function that will escape those single quotes for you. Okay? So that's that. That's also a very important part of input validation. And also, one other important thing is MySQL query. When you're calling that function, which sends the query to the server, then you need to check for its return value. So if MySQL query returns false, then you need to apologize at the user because there's been something wrong with the SQL query. Okay? And these slides will be up on the website in case you forget. Okay, so I wanted to leave you with... So now that we're talking about final projects, I wanted to leave you, if David will give me some time, with my final project for CS50 last year, which was crimsondining.org. I'm not sure if any of you have heard of it, but it's advertised by HUDs quite extensively, but no one seems to be using it. It basically just shows you the menu from today and from the previous 15 months now that it's been running for. So some neat things that it uses are Ajax and JavaScript. So for example, there's this preferences feature. Okay, and it's also a Facebook application. Okay, so if I go to prefs, favorite dish notifications, if I say I'm a fan of, say, I don't know, brown basmati rice, then I type brown basmati, and then I can type hit enter, then hit add, and it adds it on the fly. So this is an example of Ajax, and you might find it useful, maybe in CS50 Finance itself, but in your final projects. This is Ajax, uses JavaScript, and it's also, the entire thing is coded in PHP. So if you're interested, go to crimsondining.org. I know a couple of you are thinking of implementing something very similar, which is fine. I just wanted to show you my final project. So with that, I leave you. And so next walkthrough is walkthrough 8 for problem set 8, some Google Newsworthy. It's called Google Newsworthy. And that'll be my last walkthrough for CS50 this year. So I look forward to seeing you there. Thanks.